know, you know, I stand to be corrected on that.
We're discussing 881, and you may proceed.
Okay. My only point was that it's not a question of marijuana being legalized by that legislation. Because it wasn't by that court fixing.
What was the bill that Dave was saying before that related to whether or not interstate commerce made it illegal?
Okay, that's the test about the landfill situation. That is whether or not the drug is involved in interstate commerce. That's something that I have been unable to determine. I can only speculate and give you my best legal judgment. And my best judgment at the time is that if you get marijuana, pardon me, if you get Lyophil in a country, in any country where it's legal, and bring it here, bring it through several states, that it is probably involved in interstate commerce. But I have to advise the committee at the time that I can find no case that lets me be absolutely certain of that fact. If the drug is not involved in interstate commerce, then there is nothing illegal about you possessing it. That's under the terms of that act. That's what makes it illegal under the federal act, the drug we're talking about now, because it is a new drug. Okay.
Do you have your copy of 881?
House Bill 881?
Your proposed substitute that I can Xerox for the committee members.
I'm not sure whether I do.
Mr. Hackney?
Yeah. I was going to ask if it wasn't in case with, interstate commerce, isn't sale presumed in a case like that? In other words, if I go and buy a Ming vase in China, I can bring it back here and it's not involved in interstate commerce, but if I bring it back here and sell it, then it is.
That's the very question. That's it. You know, I mean, that is the point in question. That is, can you, you know, I don't know whether a sale, I just don't know whether a sale is necessary when you're talking about the drug. That I understand what you're saying, but you're jumping to the ultimate fact and issue. If a court would hold that me going to Mexico and buying Lyophil and bringing it back was involved in interstate commerce, if that involved the drug in interstate commerce, if they hold that, and there are no cases on this that I can find at all, if the court would hold that, then it's just like the night follows the day. It goes right on down the line. If the drug is involved in interstate commerce, then I've done everything else that's needed under the terms of the act to make me a violator. Okay? If it's not, then I haven't done anything under the terms of the act that makes me a violator. And I can't tell you with confidence whether that's correct. And we're speaking about the federal law.
Do the members have their copies of the committee substitute we talked about the other day for 881? I've misplaced mine.
I've got copies.
But Sharon's got copies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're going to make changes. Okay, this is a start draft. It's nothing that I recommend to you highly above any other language that you might choose if you want to do anything with this bill. It's something that Mr. Schoenberg and I sat down and talked about that we thought could serve as a starting point for you in dealing with it. I might point out that I, since the time of drafting that, had the opportunity.
Dave, would you like to sit down there?
I'll be glad to, yeah. What I want really is to not get too far away from these federal cases in case you have a question about them. That's fine. No, this is fine. Because I will tell you that there are cases on this, on appeal, on the labor question on appeal right now, so probably have the opportunity to see what the Supreme Court's going to say about that involvement.
What sort of cases can we briefly describe
for you? Well, I would prefer to defer on that if I can and see if our, we had a research analyst that went through there and looked at the cases. I've only read the head notes where I can answer the questions about if he doesn't come.
Okay.
Try and do it that way. The CS that you have in front of you is simply a starting draft. Since drafting it, I have spoken with Mr. Fletcher. Fletcher, is that right? Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And there were several changes in that legislation that he, in the proposed draft that he said that he was going to recommend. He may have spoken with somebody here about it. One of the things that he pointed out was very much that he would like to see was the, in the first sentence where it says, it is the intention of the legislature that, he would like to see that language deleted so it just starts out as a prohibition, no person, group, organization. Okay, I told him I had no objection at all to that. I didn't think that it changed the purpose of this. And there were other things I really don't recall. I just wanted to point out that that change there does make it appear a little stronger and doesn't work.
I have some of the things he suggested, perhaps you can be.
Oh, good.
He wanted to say, as prescribed to a patient, if found to be harmful by the state medical board.
Oh, that's right.
As prescribed by a patient. Mm-hmm. Exactly how would that be worded then?
I think there he was.
Just change when to and? As?
Well, let's see. Did he tell you where that went, where you wanted
to? No. He just spoke generally. Thanks. Kathleen, do you have more specific notes?
No, I
haven't. Okay, I can find that and grab that and put it back in here. Let me tell you what his concern, what was there. His concern in that area was that, any drug, any substance can be harmful ingested in unusual quantities. That water, just consuming enough water or orange juice or anything would be very harmful. And so he wanted to restrict the restricting, if you will, of Leopold to the situation where the state medical board or other authority making the determination found that Leopold was harmful in quantities normally prescribed by physicians. So that's his thought there, not just that it was harmful per se. Some unknown amount of it would be wanted to put in a restriction that they could only find it. The drug forbid its use when it was found to be harmful in dosage levels as normally as would be prescribed by a physician.
Okay. Dave, I think what I would like to do is work from the committee substitute. And as we discuss each of these amendments that were proposed by Mr. Fleischer, I would like to move them and get a committee set. Consensus on them. So I'd like to begin with the amendment which was on line 9 to delete, it is the intention of the legislature that. Is there objection to that amendment? Hearing none, that amendment is adopted. Some of these other amendments, we may not be able to give the exact language, but between you and I and the other groups of committee, we can arrive at the concept and we'll allow you to draft it, but I would like to adopt the or reject the concept as it comes up. The concept that being considered harmful by the medical board should be limited to as prescribed or administered by a physician. Is there an objection to that sort of amendment?
I don't quite understand it. What would be a possible wording? We have to get a concrete possible wording of what you're talking about.
Mr. Clark is talking about, I think, they're on the last line of the committee substitute after the word drug. So it would be unless the drug, comma, is prescribed or administered by a physician.
That would be dropping up from line 12 down into line 13.
I have some language here that this is a pretty much verbatim transcript of Mr. Fleischer's testimony. It was sort of rambling, but at one point he said, administered by a physician and requested by a patient, unless the substance as so prescribed or administered by the physician is found to be harmful by the state medical board.
Madam Chairman, is that all going there after drug?
Well, no, that started up at the beginning of line 12. When prescribed or administered by a physician and requested by a patient, unless the drug as so prescribed or administered by the physician is considered harmful by the state medical board. Mr. Parr, you're still on music.
Yeah, well, I guess that part would be all right. If everyone came, that would also take up the word considered. You ought to say, approved, declared.
Found, I think it was.
Found or something that makes it a formal, official statement of the medical board, not simply considered that to be a mental act, mental thing, and I have no objection to amendment.
Well, I think I'll take the amendment in two parts. And first, I'd like to consider your proposed word, Mr. Park. Instead of considered, say, found. Is there objection to that? Hearing none, that amendment is adopted. Then on to the greater amendment, which would be after the word drug, insert as so prescribed or administered by the physician.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Captain.
There's another one on line 10. If we take off the first clause, it is the intentional legislature that, then you have left, no person, group, organization, or facility may or shall interfere. Which is the appropriate language? Shall. I'm really saying different things, but one of the other. Shall.
Well, would you, what would be your opinion, Mr. Walker? I think shall is what we intend.
Madam Chair, I'm talking about the shall I made between the positive of the shall and the missive of me. Prior to when I left here, it's recalled that with a negative like no, he used the word may. Did that come back to you?
Yes, it does, as a matter of fact. So that a negative may equals a shall. We discovered that last year.
I think that's right.
Okay, so, so the word should be may. On line 10, after facility, insert may. Is there objection to that amendment? Hearing none, back on line 13. As so prescribed, did we adopt that one? As so prescribed or administered by the physician. Is there objection?
That was only one objection. I wouldn't want to object.
Okay. And that amendment is adopted. Another one I recall is that someone preferred not to use the word drug. Yes, it was Mr. Fleischer, preferred substance. He does not consider lateral as a drug, although the Food and Drug Administration has a very broad definition of the word drug. Does the committee have a preference on drug versus substance, vitamin, whatever?
Captain? Madam Chairman, I prefer substance.
Is there objection?
Madam Chairman, do we have it on both 11 and 13? Then?
Yes.
Madam Chairman, I don't think it'll make any difference to the Food and Substance Administration, so.
I think you're right. Mr. Walker?
I only want to point out that it clearly is a drug under federal law, and that the Lateral people probably are going to apply for certification as a new drug with it, so.
It's probably six, it just probably doesn't make any difference at all. They call all sorts of other things substances that are drugs. Sort of being deference to the people who.
As a matter of fact, Madam Chairman, it's called the Controlled Substance Act, so the deals with all of these.
So is there is there objection to changing drug to substance where it appears in the bill? Hearing none, so ordered. I would think that on line 11, for just to say forbid the use of Laetrile would be added. Is there objection to deleting on line 11 use of the drug? Deleting the words of the drug. Hearing none, it's deleted. And drug on line 13 is changed to substance.
Madam Chairman, I ask one question.
Should be, the drug should be taken out of. Yes, Mr. Park.
Well, now, is Laetrile a commonly accepted name in the whatever statutes and regulations and so on? Laetrile is not a trade name.
It's not in the statutes. That's
no under regulations. You looked up at all? I have no problem with it. Just I thought it was a problem that I'd be sure and give you something other than a trade name.
Mr. Fleischer suggested that this finding be subject to the Administrative Procedures Act. other words, when the state medical board tries to arrive at a decision, the harmfulness or not of Lakeville, that they do so following the Administrative Procedures Act. Is there objection to that?
What does that call for in the administrative action?
Pardon me?
What does that imply?
Basically, public hearings, announcement procedures for the hearings. Mr. Park?
Are other actions state medical board need to do that? Not doing that?
I don't know.
That's 4462.
Do you happen to know, Mr. Walker?
What does it do to that? I don't know what
you get that. I'm just trying to.
I don't know what your voice. Yeah, I don't know what the. I don't know what the change around the reference. Yeah, I don't know what they are. But.
The general rule is that in this state is that to make you don't make things subject to the Administrative Procedures Act. You exempt them from it. So that's why in the code you will see something that says such and such is not subject to the Administrative Procedures Act, and therefore the statute is silent as to it.
Is this sort of finding? Well, this seems like an unusual procedure. Anyway, in fact, I don't know how the state medical board would even. The FDA says they can't make this determination. I don't know how the medical board would, but would you say that probably if they were to make such a finding, it would automatically be covered?
I'm not sure. I could find that's what we're going to check. I'd like just to know whether the committee wants to make it such. It's a question really of whether you're talking about, you know, public hearings are to seek information and have public input on policy. They're actually not going to call upon to make a policy decision to determine whether or not a drug is harmful to make a medical decision. The Administrative Procedures Act will call the cost for public hearings and appeal, the ability to appeal to public hearings. Okay, now, that is called that for attention. So if it's the committee's wish to make a decision under the provisions of the Administrative Procedures Act and subject to it, if you tell me that, I'll see it.
The reason I raised the question was I don't see much point to tell the state medical board that you don't have to do the Administrative Act or anything else if there's one thing. That appears to me like the very first legislation to do that. Is there other things that have to be subject to the Administrative Act?
I think we'll find out from the state medical board. Do you suppose you might hear about the federal cases pending?
Gentlemen, what's the
how old would John take this one?
Is it luck or it's luck or it's on appeal?
Yeah,
this is the one that's probably going to be overturned.
Okay. Back. Mm-hmm. We just talked about what happened. Okay, we'll try and wing this a little bit for you right now.
Yeah, okay,
John.
Didn't mean to interrupt you. I thought maybe John would.
Okay. John's gonna discuss the Rutherford case that's on appeal now. It's an Oklahoma case, and just tell you in a sketchy kind of situation what the facts were and the holding of that court. I think that case will be overruled, probably. That's my best judgment. Against the interest of the laical advocates there, and that's a decision Mr. Fletcher agrees in. He believes it will be overturned too, and that's why he hasn't put a lot of confidence in that case. Okay, John.
Rutherford against the United States was a case that was handed down by the United States District Court in Oklahoma in 1975. And it involved a cancer victim who had undergone treatment using Laetrol in Mexico and who claimed to benefit from the treatment. And apparently he felt that he needed the Laetrol on a continuous basis if he were to arrest the cancer. So when we returned to Oklahoma, he had a friend of his travel to Mexico and obtained the drug. And in this particular case, Mr. Rutherford was bringing class action to establish that he could legitimately use the drug in the United States, have it imported from Mexico, largely on the grounds that Lethal was a did have therapeutic value and was safe, and that the FDA was mistaken in not approving the application. And he also claimed that as an individual, private individual who lacked expertise in the area of medicine and lacked the ability to prove Lethal as an effective therapeutic device, he was being denied due process of law. The way the FDA regulations are set up now, the only people who really are in a good position of establishing whether a drug is therapeutic and safe are the drug companies themselves, because they have the laboratories and the doctors and scientists and so forth. And the court held for Mr. Rutherford in a rather unusual opinion, unusual in the sense that the court took it on its own initiative and found that Lethal was a therapeutic and safe drug. And this is unusual in that these courts are supposed to be trained solely in law. They are not generally considered competent to make that kind of judgment, since it involves a great deal of knowledge and science. So that in spite of the fact that the court held in favor of the plaintiff in this case, the FDA is going to appeal, and it seems quite likely that the FDA will be successful in the appeal. I have also, kind of related to this case, been looking into the problem of an individual bringing in the drug to the United States on his own initiative, not for the purpose of sale. And for example, in this case, Mr. Rutherford had someone bring it in for him, but what would happen if, for example, he went to Mexico himself and brought it back in? And in that situation, I'm sorry to say, I can't give you a straight answer.
We've already been through that.
The Drug Cosmetic Act has never been enforced in that way. And I really don't know exactly how the federal government would handle it. I've been trying to contact a lawyer at the FDA in Los Angeles, and I've been unable to contact him. But I do hope to, I hope to get a hold of him eventually and get a straight answer. But this case makes it, the fact that this case may be overturned makes it rather dubious whether an individual could do that. So that, for example, even if the use of the drug in Alaska were lawful, bringing it into the state may be illegal. I don't know what you necessarily accomplish.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
That's not the only.
Had a bit of a drama over here, the biggest
bumblebee
we've ever seen.
I saw it crawling around on the cylinder, but I thought it was you were.
Well, why didn't you say something?
I was ready to alarm you, and then I forgot it when you started talking.
Sharon jumped up and took off. Doug came in, I was wondering what was happening, and I looked up. That thing's crawling around. Obviously wounded. There's nothing worse than a wounded bee.
Okay.
Listen, that'll hammer.
That's what I should have done, but I panicked.
See, I'm not sure as to all the actions of the State Medical Board, but the all the rules and regulations that are necessary that they adopt to carry out the effects of the Title VIII regulations, in other words, their own governing the medical profession, are subject to the Administrative Procedures Act, and the board has to comply with it, so they're well used to doing it for those purposes.
Well, which purposes again, then?
The purposes of regulating the medical profession. Mm-hmm.
Well, that sounds close to me. What do you think, Mr.
Farr? I don't see any point in putting in the bill. We're already talking before that can be all discussed.
And you don't feel it's necessary to keep it in to be sure?
Well, it's not even that.
Well, I'm not going
to
keep
it. I mean, to specify it in order to be sure that there's no.
What I want to know is just I need for you to tell me whether you want it to be. You can leave the mechanic to me of making sure that it is or is not.
Whether we want it to be required or included.
Whether you want it.
Subject.
Doesn't make a difference. Do you want it to be, do you want the decision of the State Medical Board to be subject to the requirements of the Administrative Procedures Act? That's all.
Let's take a vote on that.
All in favor, raise your hand, of making the medical board's determination of harmfulness of Laetrile subject to the Administrative Procedures Act. Kevin, when Kevin's announced she did this. You can take it either way you want.
Yeah. My problem was I thought that it's already, as I understand what we just said, it's already in there in the statutes, and anything the state medical board reviews is subject to.
Well, what Mr. Walker is saying, he'll make that determination, but he wants to know whether, in any event, we do want it to be subject to.
That's all. I want to know whether you're interested. Mm-hmm. Do you want it to be or not?
And he'll find out whether it needs to be specified in the bill.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, I'd say that the committee just wants it to be in. It looked like it was unanimous.
Okay.
Now, are there any other, Mr. Hackney?
Yeah, Madam Chairman, the concern that's voiced by the medicals is that they do not feel that this substance should be used by people who have not had recourse to regularly accepted medical procedures before they come to this state. Just a general question of Dave, is there a possibility of drumming up any kind of language that would make this an in extremis thing without going to 18 pages?
I don't know. I can't think of a way, and I'm not sure you would want to anyway, because what you're hinging this, if I may, for a second, what you're hinging this on is interference with the physician-patient relationship and saying that Laetrile is something the physician should be allowed to prescribe and administer to their patients as a medical judgment. And then if you do that, you're going to be saying, but it's a legislative judgment that medically they should only be able to administer it. It's either something the physician should be able to use or not.
Mr. Hackney, I'd like to speak to that. You know what, Dr. Witt, I don't see him here today, he may drop in later. I was in talking to you about this very bill today, and as most physicians, he is opposed to legalizing Laetrile. He's persuaded that it's really doesn't do any help. And I said that one of the arguments the medical profession has put up that seems to me the most specious is the one that if people can get Laetrile, they won't use other things. And I said it seems to me it's much more likely that they would not be, you know, keeping up with their chemotherapy or cobalt therapy or whatever. More likely that they would neglect those if they had to leave the country. And he told me of a case, in fact, of a patient who did get desperate and leave the country for some time to get Laetrile rather than staying here and receiving treatment. And it turned out, apparently happily for her, she eventually decided that the Laetrile was not doing her any good. She embarked on chemotherapy or radiotherapy, whatever, and is now okay. But he was real concerned at the time that she did cheat herself out of these other methods because she had to leave the country, where if he'd been able to prescribe Laetrile at the same time as the others, she might have stayed and gotten it all. And so that particular concern that you're expressing for them, I think it just works the opposite way. They think that really the kinds of restrictions we're right now trying to, the restrictions we're trying to lift, will prevent that thing from happening rather than cause it to happen now. I would say that
I was just flopping around trying to get a chance across some language that would do away with the outraged screams of the docs.
Like in this case, you know, he wouldn't, the doctor, this woman's doctor would have been able to say at that point that there was a last recourse because she had not availed herself of the other, you know, options yet. Still, she left the country. So I think there are cases where really that would be helpful. I have heard one concern of the physician, so that I think is legitimate, and that, and also of the hospital, that is the malpractice issue. And I'm wondering if Dave could suggest any language that might help the hospitals and doctors out of a possible malpractice problem when the situation is that the substance is the patient's own, and that it's being administered only at the patient's request.
I will think about that, Madam Chairman. I don't know what I can do, because that's the situation that exists now, as I understand it, with drugs anyway. You know, if a physician administers you a drug that you don't want, in other words, I don't know. I think that is the situation that depends with all drugs, isn't it? Unless I'm in error, if a physician tells me that he's giving me Dramamine, but instead is giving me a secret cyanide treatment that he knows I would not have, acquiesced in had I known, and I take it, and something happens, and it's for sure that I have the ability to sue him or seek recompense for whatever damage I believe that's caused me, and let a jury determine whether or not it did happen.
What I think what we want to do is sort of the opposite, is to say, if I'm in the hospital, I've been on Laetrile, and I say, look, doc, I'd like you to give me a shot of this every day while I'm in here, and it's my own drug that I have for my own use and my own substance, and I'm the one that's asked you to administer it to me. In that case, I can't later come back and say, I have a reaction to it. That's it. I can't. So the patient may not sue a physician for administering the patient's own substance at the patient's request. Seems to me that would be... you bring it back to us.
Physicians can protect themselves from that. I just like to think of that a little bit. It seems to me that a release would do that right now.
I still have a question also about whether a hospital, whether or not this piece of legislation would be enacted, would have the right or would have to allow a patient and physician to enter into an agreement in their own hospital.
No, ma'am.
I do not.
Nothing you can do to make that.
Nothing you can do to do what?
To take hospitals and legislatively require them to allow the drug to be administered in the hospital.
Isn't that what we're trying to do?
Yes, ma'am, but I told you some time ago that I couldn't conceive of a way you could do that.
Isn't that covered by an organization or facility?
It's there. You can't do it. I'm just sure. I'm asking you.
I mean, the legislative power is not without limit.
In other words, the unwritten thing here is accept hospitals in this bill.
Well, it is. No, ma'am, it's not. It's more than hospitals. You recall, I told you that. Let's see what's left in there.
I thought you know what we're
no person, group, or organization. As the bill was first before you, it would have allowed you to find the AMA. If it decided to suspend its members for prescribing or using medical, and I explained to you that no, that's a voluntary organization that physicians are not required by the state to belong to. They belong to it or not, the Alaska Medical Association to or not as they wish, and there's nothing, no matter what you say in here, if those associations say anybody, any member that uses medical is out of this association, then they will be out. And there's nothing saying that they won't be doesn't make it so. Likewise, in hospitals, any reasonable regulation that a hospital makes is going to be upheld. And the only question, if a hospital says, attending physicians using Laetrile in this hospital will have their privileges withdrawn, and if a hospital says, the only possible legal test of that decision is it reasonable? That's all. If it's reasonable, then they can do it. And that's what the court will get to determine. I suggested to you, I thought that the court would determine in as much as it was not authorized in this country, and the FDA had approved it, that it would probably be reasonable. So, yes, I think there's nothing you can do.
Well, I must have been the only one that picked up on that. Went right over my head, too, the first time. Okay. I'm glad you mentioned it in your first quote.
Of course.
No physician may be subject to disciplinary action for provisions of 0864, whatever that is, section is there, that's the one that medical board has powers over physicians. Court describing or administering Laetrile upon request by a patient under his care. Unless the state medical board, after hearings conducted in accordance with the Administrative Procedures Act, makes a finding that Laetrile is all I'm saying is they couldn't discipline. They couldn't do anything in a disciplinary fashion because they couldn't. They didn't mean the hospital would have doing this. It says they couldn't bring any charges against them. Or, you know, boy.
But the original problem that caused the state ratchet, which was people in the hospital were not allowed to continue taking the substance later. That problem's not been met.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Walker feels
I realize it may not be, but I...
Yes. Well, I'm beginning to agree then with Mr. Walker. It appears we can't sanction or control a private organization. But like you said, a volunteer organization can't legislate what their inner rules and regulations are. Right?
Are there
any
state-operated hospitals?
State-operated hospitals?
But, Madam Chairman, it seems to me Charlie's language is about the only thing we can do, because we do have jurisdiction over the state medical board.
If I can find something else we can do, it's fine, but yeah.
I'm not even sure now if by disciplinary action, do you mean that the AMA could not?
Under the new malpractice thing, this is one thing I'm certain will remain, and I'm pretty sure both Senate and House agree on it, that the state medical board will have a range of penalties they may use. Originally, all they could do was rip full license. But now they'll have the power to take away a license, to require additional training, to restrict the phase of physician's practice, a number of other things. And so they they couldn't take any disciplinary action for this, unless the medical board had made a formal finding or something, which would be on their must on their back if they come out and make this finding, they will do it.
You still aren't considering disciplinary action as a hospital would suggest that that person not practicing in the hospital anymore advances to be. I don't think it could be done anyway. I'm just wondering if that would stay
That is a possibility. There's a, what do we call that thing we just passed through here last year to make Uncle Sam happy?
Yes, sir.
Yes. No, we could make it no position where you said disciplinary action by the state board or the PSRO for prescribing intervention. You know, I'm just thinking this is about the limit of where we really can go legally, it seems to me.
I think
it is
too.
Mm-hmm.
No, very good. PSRO,
that is. Mm-hmm. Mr. Parker, that is. Let this back by. No physician shall be subject to disciplinary action under the provisions of 0864 for prescribing or administering.
Upon request by a patient under his care.
I don't think you can say prescribe. You just can say administer.
No, we have prescribed and administer.
Well, see, in the clinic substitute, but that was based on the fact that the prescription would have arrived from Mexico. Presumably there would be a doctor in Mexico that would have prescribed it. It would be the doctor in Alaska that would have administered it.
I don't know. I just looked up. It seems to me that there might be a
the arrangements are in Mexico for getting the drug. I don't know whether they will accept an American physician's prescription. It might be possible that a doctor in Alaska could prescribe it and then administer it.
If you wanted to expand it to include a PSRO, you would simply split that way, but in the first line, no physician will be taking disciplinary action by the state medical board or the appropriate PSRO on the provision of 864 or something.
My own feeling is mostly disquieted because I thought, I thought we were getting somewhere, and it seems that perhaps we weren't getting anywhere at all. Nonetheless, I think what I'd kind of like to do is to keep Section 1 as we have so far amended it and use Mr. Parr's language as Section 2. Perhaps get that to judiciary for further refinement.
Dr. Paul has a book here that he just showed me, the official or the generic name or whatever of landfill, and it's spelled, maybe you can expand on this, Dr. Paul, it's AMYGDHAM. I don't know if we want to use that or they'll confuse people with that. That's
the technical name. That's the generic name.
I think perhaps it'd be a good idea to use that. We might put landfill in parentheses.
Is it
Inasmuch as there is a feeling that the drug should be prescribed for generic terms.
Is there objection to using the word amygdalin in the bill?
That term should be what apricorn was.
Apricorn, I think that's the brand. I think that's the brand. Vitamin B7.
Wrong purposes.
You know, one of the problems this first part of this bill is one we run into another. We have this bill, of course, for the first time, of course. You know, people who have a moral objection to something, and you simply can't legislate, although it will do it. It's a professional judgment. I believe the courts have held that you can't force doctors to perform abortions, for example. Morally, if it was morally wrong, you can't force them to do it. And I don't really force the hospital staff if they thought it was wrong, if that professional judgment to commit this. That's why I'm taking a negative step.
Got to come through here again.
Susan, look at that daycare regulations. I think we have it. Dr. Paul, do you have a few words to say on daycare?
Substitute,
you had stated that the state medical board would be making a determination whether the this drug or substance would be harmful. And our feeling is that the state medical board would not have the capabilities for this, as it should be based on clinical trials. And it would be rather difficult for this board to do it. Even though there were public hearings, there still should be some clinical evaluation of whether this is a harmful or a harmful drug or substance.
Many times, Dr. Paul's the example of thalidomide has been brought up in discussing Laetrile, and I'm really sympathetic to that. It seems to me in the situation where people are using Laetrile, where generally they've been told that they have no hope, the question of harm loses a lot of its scariness. And my personal inclination is to say that nothing so far has indicated that it does any harm, unless maybe taken oral. It may do some good, and that good might be to save your life. It seems to me to be worth the risk.
We're just calling these facts to the committee's attention. And also that you do have a resolution calling for the Food and Drug Administration to conduct careful clinical investigation and trials of this, and I feel this is really a very valuable resolution. So all that we wanted to point out here was the reference to the state medical board and the fact that they did not have the capabilities. And also that with Laetrile, that it's still not an approved drug, and there may be difficulties with the Food and Drug Administration on this. And also that if it's brought in as a food product, that there will also be difficulties on this with the Food and Drug Administration because of the cyanide content of the intoxication that is on the food.
Mr. Chairman, I was wondering if Dr. Paul wants that part of the state medical board changed to the Division of Health, Department of Health for State.
Thanks, Ben, no thanks.
Mr. Farr, I appreciate your recognition, but I must decline. We do not have the resources.
You have a laboratory, don't you?
We have a laboratory, that is true, but we do not have the ability to do clinical evaluation. I still feel that there should be a thorough clinical evaluation that should be done by the National Foundation.
Mr. Paul. I'm sorry.
Are you saying then, Dr. Paul, that it would be better to leave out reference to the state medical board altogether? If we do that, are we not then putting ourselves in this position of describing that we've done everything else for the last couple of years? I don't know why not.
I have a question. Are you as serious about removing these people from our community now as you are? You're just as serious. You want to leave me. That's all. I would so move. What was that last one? With individual recommendations.
What's that last one?
That we move this to the committee with individual recommendations.
Which form?
I think the last form. With or without Mr. Farr's wording as a section two, as we discussed a few months ago. I'd put Mr. Farr's wording here and move it out without recommendations. With individual recommendations. The motion is to pass out.
Madam Chair,
yes.
You, I know you want. Is that Ms. Byrne? Is that with the amendments that you've adopted
yes.
here
mm-hmm.
so far today? And okay, I just want to be sure where
it is.
Motion
is to accept the hospital 81 with section 1 amended as we have agreed today. Section 2 substantially, Mr. Parr's.
I didn't realize that, Madam Chairman. I thought we were accepting Mr. Parr's amendment, period. I think there's use for moving on to the first part, if it doesn't work well.
We never have adopted Mr. Parr's language.
I haven't really moved it, Madam Chairman. I did say I was going to propose it.
Yes. Helen, I'll just withdraw your motion for a minute until we decide we want to do it, Charlie.
Well, Madam Chairman, I just get the thing on the form of the course. I'll move that the following is a committee substitute for our existing text of our PA1. No position may be subject to disciplinary action by the State Medical Board or PSRO on provisions of 8.64 for prescribing or administering Latrobe upon request by a patient in his care, unless the board, after hearing conducted in accordance with the Administrative Procedures Act, has made a formal finding of their first home.
Okay, Mr.
Hanson. That would be
replacing the existing text. Beginning at line 9, please.
I think everyone understands the motion. Catherine left for a second in the oh, she's back. Catherine, Charlie moved his
second section 2.
Well, not as a section 2, but as a whole bill. I'm going to propose that I'd prefer to have it as a section.
I would like to, Madam Chairman, keep the entire bill intact.
Well, let's vote on Charlie's motion. And all in favor of having Charlie's motion be the entire bill and not include, in other words, deleting the present section 1 and substitute Charlie's support. My feeling is in part that I would like to have something of the original part of this carried over to judiciary so that the people who initiated this and are so concerned about it don't feel that they're all the things have fallen on deaf ears. I'm sure that if Mr. Walker's opinion is accurate that we may not so encumber hospitals, that will be taken out to the judiciary. And I'm sure Mr. Parr that we can count on you to be sure that happens. But I'd like to move it this way to get it out so that people don't feel that the legislature didn't respond. Section 1 would be as is, as amended.
As
section
amended.
2 would be Charlie's language.
Yes.
Is there objection to that? Hearing that, that amendment is adopted and the bill is moved out with individual recommendations. I suspect we'll wait until Mr. Walker has the bill typed up before we sign the page. Okay, let's get on to it.
Madam Chairman, what is from, how many more bills are we taking?
We have 3 more bills, but
I'm going to have to excuse myself and actually be a few minutes to go over and
I think there's one that's really quick one. You may want to stay
well,
with
it's
long
distance call.
What's the long distance call?
So I'll have to go. I'll run over there and I'll try to get it. Which one are you going to take up from here?
If I get in trouble, I'll wait for
it. All right.
Kevin, you can't make the call from this phone?
No, I can't. I'll have to get your budget in there.
Okay.
I'll be back soon.
Well, let's see. Here on the child protection bill.
Okay. 1, 2, 3.
Okay, you were here for the nursing bill? Nurses bill?
Okay.
We'll start then with the child protection bill. Before we have testimony, I would like to. We have 3 people here from the Department of Health and Services. No, two from Health and Social Services, one from Northwest Federation for Human Services, is that correct? Last year, we passed out House Bill 431, 432, both relating to child abuse. One of them incorporated all of the language in Senate Bill number 371, amending verbatim, absolutely the same language, except that on line, after physical, on line 25, in our bill it said, or mental injury. So child abuse or neglect means physical or mental injury. And then sexual abuse or maltreatment of a child. And then, was that the age of 18 in our bill? Principal change was the mental abuse one. Part of the problem was at that time there was no federal definition of mental abuse. That's why the Senate did not include it. We didn't have that problem. We included it, and and that's essentially the only difference in this bill. We wanted to pass.
How do we have two bills? One is the department's recommendation for the. We didn't put a, that on there, but it's the one who, which has it in parentheses, the changes.
Two things that were in the bill that we passed but are not in this one are mental abuse, or mental injury, and negligent treatment. We passed it with those terms in. Those terms are the ones that are recommended apparently in the federal legislation, the definition of child abuse. The Senate did not include those. The sponsor of the Senate bill did originally have those in. She prefers those terms to the Senate. In general, did not. So the question, the initial question to ask, I think, is the committee still comfortable with that language? Would you like to include it into this bill and then just pass it on? Or do you feel that you want to test the testimony on those points?
I think we should never.
Okay. Is there some order which you prefer to proceed?
Madam Chairman, committee, I'm Gary Sheridan with the Department of Health and Social Services. I'm the Social Service Program Coordinator, and better known as Title 20 Coordinator. So I'm here to testify on behalf of the Director of the Division of Social Services. Have you seen or do you have a copy of the position paper by the Department on Senate Bill 271?
Is that what this is? The bill itself?
No.
I don't have one in my file.
I can zero out.
I have a fiscal note which says there are no fiscal implications to this bill.
I'd like to draw your attention to several of the problems that might be faced in terms if we leave the term or some of the terms out of it. One of them, particularly with mental injury, I spoke with Mr. Granato on the telephone from Region 10 this morning, and he mentioned that we were testifying today on the bill. and he pointed out the three main requirements under Public Law 93247, which is the Child Abuse and Neglect Prevention and Treatment Program, which allows us up to $25,000 per year, I understand, on grants. For child abuse requires at the minimum of three things. That would be the age 18, and the language includes sexual abuse and mental injury. He felt very uncomfortable with the fact that the present Senate version did not include mental injuries such as that in the original bill, and advised us to be sure and point that. I believe Mr. Ed Smith will have further testimony regarding that part of the federal regulation.
Mr. Hatton.
Sheridan, yes, sir.
$5,000 a year federal funds.
That's my understanding.
If you don't put the word mental in there, you lose $25,000.
Very seriously, could jeopardize the mental claim.
Just one $25,000?
Yes, out of this particular, it's a grant program.
Into many different grants, or our state would receive a total of $25,000?
I'd have to defer that question, I think, to Mr. Smith, who might be able to be more specific about that. Mr. Smith is working with our division on the child abuse.
Mr. Smith, would you like to come?
Yes.
Are you a federal, Mr. Smith? Or
no. No, neither. I'm a non-profit private, Mr. Smith.
Those are kind of hard to catch, aren't they?
There is money in that federal legislation that is, allows up an amount of money over $20,000 a year. There's some formula with relation to the number of children in the state under 18. And the amount for this year is $25,000. So if our law is in compliance with their model statute, and if we make an application, and if they accept the application, I believe they're anxious to, then the state would receive $25,000 to carry out that proposal. I understand as long as the law is in effect, we would have an opportunity in other years to make similar applications for other projects that would amount to over $20,000, but around.
Mr. Park.
I suggest we ignore the fact on Assembly that $25,000 for it, which is built in DC with our own state needs.
Yeah, I'm glad to agree with you, Mr.
Now, where the paperwork it take to get it?
Yeah, I think you're right. And I almost find not to say this except that I don't want to be hiding with you either. This summer on the we had a conference on child abuse that I was on a panel for. And my recollection is that there were some other funds that were also tied to it. There was a stick. The $25,000 might be perceived as a carrot, but there was, which was a pretty scrawny carrot. But I thought there was a big stick too. Something about a bunch of other funds.
Madam Chair, I think it was just the reverse. I think in order to get that $20,000, you had to have the child conference, but it cost us about $50,000.
Is that how that works?
However, I agree with the child. I agree with the conference, and I agree with the mental injury,
regardless of the money. And I think regardless of money, to decide on an issue this serious, whether which way is better for the state.
Well, Madam Chairman, I disagree with that. I say that if the state's going to spend the money, then doggone it, the state ought to lay out the ground rules under which the money's going to be spent. And if there's $25,000 in federal money, take it and stop it.
Well, I think that's what I'm saying.
I think that's what I'm saying.
We all agree. We're all saying we're not going to let the federal money dictate our policy. We're going to establish our policy for our own money.
And that we all understand.
Madam Chair, I would recommend that we accept the amendment of Laura Mendel on page, on line 25, page 1, between physical injury.
Is there objection?
I'd like to hear what the thing is, and if they're going to speak out.
Okay, Mr. Smith, was that your particular area of expertise, that particular change?
Yes, in the sense that I have been specialist in child services in my previous job, and now in this assignment, am assigned to the Division of Social Services to act as a specialist.
specialist for child protective services. And from what I have, I've been here since April 1st, and from what I gather, and from also talking with some of the people in the field, not only in the division, but outside of the division, that this kind of language is helpful, broadens the definition to get at the area of emotional abuse, which is can be as devastating or more devastating than physical abuse, or just as devastating.
Where did this come from?
Mr. Smith gave it, all that information to me. I just Xeroxed it. It's just different interpretations of mental, yeah, emotional.
You're right, I understand. You're right. You have that out of it.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the thing is that I noticed under the emotional abuse and neglect portion of it, to make the statement that it's far more difficult to identify than its physical counterpart. Such maltreatment includes the parent's lack of love and proper direction, as determined by whom?
I think the present law indicates that if there is a complaint, that the division must investigate that complaint and come to a determination whether there is a valid complaint. And if there is, that the division offers services to the family, and the family has a right to accept them or not. If the situation appears to the worker to be so severe as to endanger that child's well-being, then the division has the option of petitioning the court and bringing the matter to the court, the attention of the court, and then the court decides whether there is to be intervention or no. And that's the way it is now. If you included mental injury, then those would be further grounds for people to make to bring those situations to the attention of the division. They would go through the same process. Talk with the family, and the family, if it appeared that it was a substantial and a harmful thing, then offer the family services, and if the family doesn't want services, then either withdraw or bring the matter to the attention of the court.
But it would seem to me that you broaden this, where you could almost include any family that you wanted to include.
The division only goes in on where there is a complaint from someone in the community. So it wouldn't, if they were complaining about a family, yes, there are some complaints that are given that are not valid, and that's part of the division's job to determine that. I think about somewhere in the neighborhood of 25% are not validated, and not this agreement.
You're from the Northwest Federation for Human Services.
Yes.
And who are they?
The Northwest Federation for Human Services is one of 16 regional centers that was established by the same law that we were referring to earlier, the Child Abuse Act. And they have been put in, one of the things that they do is they are made up of representatives from the four states, Alaska, Washington, Oregon, and Idaho. And they have made proposals to the federal government under that act to get some of the things that those four states wanted. And what Alaska wanted was somebody to work specifically on manual material and other particular problems as related to child abuse. And that's why, how come I am.
You draw your entire support then from the federal grant that?
Yes, that's what I go to. Yes.
From higher support, or is it state matching funds?
No. The Federation has its entire grant from the federal government.
What's the amount of that grant?
I think it's for this year about $215,000.
And how many people do you have on staff?
I am not that well acquainted with the division or with the that organization to know the particulars of the staff. But let me see. I think there are about five people, and I would be the sixth.
You're all in Anchorage?
Oh no, they're in Boise, Idaho. I'm sorry.
Oh.
No, the commitment here is not for that amount of money. The commitment for Alaska is a year's commitment to provide this technical assistance. And I believe that ranges in the amount of about $40,000.
That's state funds.
No, of the $250,000 that the Northwest Federation has.
So you actually are a federal agency?
No, I'm not. I work for a nonprofit corporation that has a federal grant. and I'm not a federal employee. I may be.
I would like to interpose the definition, new definition of medical injury. What it was lacking at the time of Senate considering this bill and run it through and then apparently this was. And the definition is an injury to the intellectual or psychological capacity of a child as evidenced by an observable and substantial impairment in his ability to function within a normal range of performance and behavior with due regard to his culture.
What they've done in this bill is to repeal the detailed six definitions given in the original statute. Simply have one definition. What are you proposing to make? Is it a two-part definition?
I feel like I've gotten into quagmire here. I'm not sure I understand why we're having trouble.
Well, here's the original.
All I'm saying is
in all six of these definitions, but one is the bill.
Mr. Parr, we already passed this bill, except that we had more in it, and I'm just asking. Committee want to pass it again the way we passed it before, or concur in the Senate deletions? And I understand about this.
Well, I apologize, Ms. Ellis. You were defining mental injury. Now you want the definition of mental injury. You want the bill. I misunderstood you, I guess.
No, that won't go into the bill. But I'm just saying that mental injury has been defined for national purposes where it wasn't before.
I looked at this bill and thought, well, it's beautiful. I've got some other type things. I almost wish that we hadn't given all this backup material.
I really have some
problems with it, because then I'd read all these definitions to somebody back in Washington. And
we could define mental injury however we want it, I suppose.
Well, I was looking at other things, Madam Chairman. For example, physical neglect. I thought I know it is. But these children, they show evidence of inadequate home management. They're unclean and unkempt. Their clothes are torn and dirty, and they're often unbathed. My God, anybody's ever raised boys, at least. That's a normal state of affairs, there's no other way. Not very healthy. There's no other way, except when you go to bed. They sweep their head, they're clean. But otherwise, that's a normal state of affairs. Somebody comes into all this fancy, and I would think twice if we're going to use these federal definitions.
Perhaps we should stop talking about the federal definition.
Madam Chairman, I would like to question the chairman of that as to what it really means. In the old legislation, under Section 5, neglect means a failure to provide necessary food, care, clothing, shelter, or medical attention for a child. Now, the term neglect that stands by itself under the proposed Senate Bill 371 seems pretty loosely defined. No, it really doesn't. In fact, it talks about what abuse is under 371, which means the physical injury, sexual abuse type, which would be more in keeping with child abuse, but I wonder if the word neglect
really is broad enough the way it's used in just the return. I would like to suggest that the word neglect include the old definition. In the position paper that the Department of Health and Social Services prepared for the Senate bill, in paragraph 2, they talk about the requirement under the new bill that a guardian ad litem represent the child in, quote, all actions, unquote, taken by the department seems impractical and unnecessary. Impractical in that the receipt of a report of abuse or neglect, the investigation of the report, and the protective action which may be necessary would all come within the purview of, quote, all actions, unquote. No guardian ad litem would be appointed or known during this phase of, or this phase of action. This is actually the workup portion of it, and what he's really saying here is that the guardian ad litem should only be involved if there were judicial proceedings, rather than the whole gauntlet of the social service workup. What it's done, the bill itself, has placed the guardian ad litem into a much broader realm when it comes to everything.
Connie, this has been sort of free-ranging and wild discussion, and I don't want to leave you out. Do you have some particular additional comments to make? Or
how? Raise my hand.
If you have something to say, okay.
I am concerned about the changes that have made that seem to leave out some of the definitions at the end of the old bill. If you're important, they be left in.
At the end of the old bill?
Yes.
Which
old
bill?
The present law.
And the law.
Okay.
You might have a copy of the law.
Yeah. But these are the things we have been concerned about. And then as we read this bill, let's see, number one, abusing the description, number two, child in the person under 6 feet, and two. So these things have been left out of that bill that we built it before 5 and 6.
Yeah, they didn't feel it.
It would be repealed under
307. And this is what concerns us in these definitions. It may be able to have to do
that. Well, I beg your pardon, you're not wrong.
It's only number one.
Only one is repealed.
But then it becomes in conflict with 2 and 5 if you pass number one.
Right. So I think that definition.
Yes.
Would that be 8?
That's true.
Would you read 2 and 5, Charlie?
To a child means a person under 16 years of age. 5, neglect means a failure to provide necessary food, care, clothing, shelter, and medical attention to a child.
And these are what you were recommending in this bill.
That's what I was, yeah, that was my offering to the committee, was to say, look at that, that's my only offering, was to say, this is, if I understood what you were trying to do, this is might be one alternative way of doing it.
Okay, so then, number one, we would only define abuse. That would allow us to continue the neglect definition.
As is.
And I think abuse is really what that describes. I think that's it. And you would delete under the age of 18 because number two says 16.
And then change number two to 18.
Okay. Does everybody follow that? Because you finally got through the name.
Actually, the only thing
where I was at before, I wasn't picking up on it. Charlie, I apologize.
I didn't realize.
I wasn't hearing what you were saying.
I didn't realize this whole change thing is in past round. I just had to wait there. It's not a bleed now.
I think the coffee's not strong enough today. Mr. Smith, you still are proposing all that the word child and or neglect be taken out. We only abuse.
Yes.
Okay. Taking out child seems to me a sort of.
Well.
Is that how you feel about it too?
No. Number two says defines child. In the present statute, the child is.
Yeah, but I mean, we could call number one.
Oh, you could call
child abuse. Abuse.
Yes.
Well, we did, though. You say in the second line of that definition of a child. Could somebody explain your work with Senate and your approach? Why on this, in this original, this version of the point of these alternate versions, what the last two lines do at the bottom of page one, or what did he say, this means official mental injury, et cetera, by the person responsible for child welfare, period. What is the rest of the circumstances indicate?
It only broadens that. Broadens the statute to include threatened harm.
You lost me. Now we say it means physical or mental injury, sexual abuse or maltreatment, okay? And we say who doesn't, the person responsible for the child welfare. But, you know, how could you maltreat a child under any circumstances which didn't indicate that the child's health or welfare is harmed?
Well, I think a case could, I really like that language, because I think a case could be made that a spanking is physical injury, isn't it? I mean, doesn't really do anything except sting, but it's physical injury. I think that the physical injury should say that their health or welfare is harmed or threatened in the bond.
Mr. Chairman, are you saying that you made a kid out of somebody's holding, somebody spanked him?
No. Mr. Hackney, somehow things are getting garbled between me and you.
Yeah, but
what I'm saying is just the opposite, that if we took out that last half a dozen words there, or maybe even the last two lines on page one, then a person could yank a child out of the home merely because they had spanked them, because that would have been physical injury. I think that we should keep in those last two lines, because that's what says that the physical injury must indicate that the child's health or welfare is threatened by this. Spanking obviously doesn't threaten the child's health. Repeatedly breaking their arms does.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, I feel that that particular phrase is quite important, because it does put it over beyond the ordinary everyday discipline that we use to children into the harmful. But this is a
different. Mr. Chairman, this is already in law. It's already.
It's not. I'm not sure.
Which?
Which indicate the child's health and welfare?
No.
That is not.
I think now everyone understands the thrust of the department's proposed amendments. Is there objection to those amendments? Deleting child, deleting or neglect, and deleting under the age of 18, and inserting or mental. Is there objection?
You're talking about the number one only now.
Yes, the number one only so far. Are you talking about the definition I read? What is NCCAN?
National Center for Child Abuse and Neglect. It's the national center that was set up under that law.
Okay.
So it is that.
That is the federal definition. Sharon, you said that's the model federal definition. Does that mean it hasn't been accepted by the feds, or it is?
It is law.
It's
embodied in the statute. The statute.
And Mr. Agnew, you're uncomfortable with that?
Well, yeah, from two standpoints.
Oh, I guess you were reading something else.
Well, I'm reading something out of here and something out of here. Something more somewhere else.
I know it's you. It's just me.
Not really sure who's on the footage.
Yeah,
got it.
Well, Mr. Smith, my inclination, my opinion, sure what exactly this is, but it seems to me that this definition that I've just read is the binding one, rather than such explanations as appear here. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Mr. Hagen, would you give that definition again, the one that now counts? Because this is new, and it's just coming. It's dated April 26th.
That I'm the sheet.
No, it's the new one that Sharon just ran and got from me. Mental injury. It's from here. Is it on there? Something about the faster I go, the more I say, the deeper I get. You know, where it says observable and substantial impairment. Whenever you're talking about something mental, you know, it's sort of alarming because there's always a chance to use this when we got into a 733 and 734. But it seems to me you've got to set some kind of description somewhere, and you have to say that, you have to assume that someone's going to be able to recognize and describe these sorts of symptoms. I don't know how you better describe it. Let's talk about these amendments one at a time. Anyone opposed to deleting the word child? I am. Is anyone else?
I have a question. What is the reason for eliminating?
The reason I eliminated was that to me this was defining abuse, and child was in the next section.
Well, see, it doesn't fit. I think child has to be in there because you're saying you can't say that abuse is maltreatment of a child. You have to say child abuse is maltreatment of a child. And you'll see that on line 26, one of the definitions is maltreatment of a child. I think you have to say child abuse is maltreatment or maltreatment of a child.
The statutes, as you said here, 1447707, how was the definition in this chapter?
In regard to child protection.
Yeah, I think it probably doesn't matter one way or the other, but I like it better.
I don't really care.
You don't care?
No. Helen? I don't care.
You don't want it? All right, two in and two no wrecks, that makes it in. Okay. The next amendment is to delete or neglect.
It does no abuse to the people of even in there.
Because neglect is defined later on in number. Oh, you're still on. Wait a minute now. We rejected the amendment to take out child. Child is still in. The next amendment is to take out or neglect. And neglect is defined subsequently. This will just eliminate conflict. Is there objection to deleting or neglect? Hearing none, or neglect is deleted. Is there objection to deleting under the age of 18 and then changing in, is it number two, Mr. Paul? The definition of child to be a person who is under the age of 18 rather than 16. You may recall when we had this bill before, so as a House bill, there is a problem because there was a gap. The gap is the 17-year-old, something who, because they're not a grown-up and they're not a child, and they were really in no man's land. So taking it back to 18 allows it to be covered. Is there objection to deleting it from number one, but including it, amending it into number two? And that amendment is adopted. On or mental. The amendment is to add the words or mental on line 25 after the word physical. Mr. Hackney, is uncomfortable with that?
Yes. Because I think the definition that means that we're going to be stuck to this definition here, then I don't think that definition holds water. I think it's so broad that but I think you're inviting state infringement into the parent-child relationship to a degree.
degree that I'm not willing to accept.
My only response to that is, Mr. Matthew, I can think how you might possibly find me. Do you have some ideas on how to do that?
Well, I can't either. I'm more concerned why the department now wants the definition.
Well, the department only wants to put in compliance with every.
That's the only reason they want the definition.
Yes, you know, when you read this definition, it really is not that severe.
I don't think so either.
Just failure to supply a child with adequate food, clothing, shelter, education, as defined by our state laws. Now, I don't know what our state
laws are. That's physical. The mental one is the next one, too.
Injury to intellectual or psychological capacity of the child, exhibits observable and substantial disability, punishable from a normal age of time to be. With due regard to his culture, we could add, and financial capabilities. Sometimes it's financial capabilities that prevent him from also creating mental abuse. But I really don't see much. It's like anything else. You get somebody in who's going to do a full Big Brother act, they can take anything that they can abuse of the public.
Yeah, but Helen, if we invite that second in, then it seems to me, you know, if we're just doing this to scoop up $25,000,
let's not say that, because I think all of us feel like $25,000 can go take a leap. But, you know, I don't think I know anyone who is abusing their child mentally to such an extent that they would be included in this definition, because I think this is really pretty strong stuff, this definition. But I think I can, you know, we've all seen, I suppose, parents who are pretty mean to their kids and don't necessarily hit them. And I think I can see from those small examples how a parent might really do harm if this sort of thing were carried to an extreme. Perhaps you've read, in my experience, it's limited to reading about parents or guardians who, you know, continually berate and insult and cut down a child. And I know a man, for instance, who, when his kid cries in the dark, opens the bedroom door quietly and yells into it. And scares the kid to death, and he's only about 3, and I think that's just awful. And, you know, I wouldn't call that mental abuse, but I can imagine that, you know, exaggerations on that theme could really do terrific harm to a child. So I think if we want to prevent terrible things happening to children in the area of mental abuse, that we should have something about it in the law. If we can come up with a definition of our own that we like better than this federal one, you know, that's fine, but I think we ought to work on including it.
Well, I don't. It's that simple. You've got, you've got votes to put it in. Fine. Let's go ahead and put it in.
Do you think mental abuse is not a reality? I mean, do you think that's really not a reality?
I think mental abuse cannot be defined in this
country. And so we should just forget it. I guess, yep. Mr. Hart.
I just have a question. The injury to the intellectual capacity of the child, psychological, of course, maybe most of the same case. Injured intellectual capacity,
I think it's covered already.
Psychological warping, I think I've seen it.
No one's going to be coming up with what mental abuse is. I don't know how many people remember what postnatal rejection, but it's very prevalent where a mother rejects a child after the born. And they often carry this through. And that kid is rejected, and I've seen them rejected to the point where they've been delegated to a man puts out on the back porch with five other youngsters sleeping in beds. That's not physical abuse. No, that isn't physical abuse. He's probably healthier than the kids that sleep on a soft mattress inside. But he is mentally abused. I've seen the same ones that were not given the same portions on their plate at the table. They probably didn't suffer because we all eat too much anyway. But the fact that, or maybe he's the last one to be served, or maybe he got the wing of the chicken and he's doing something else. I've seen these things happen. And there is such a thing as mental abuse. And parents do it. And especially, and it's in some of our better homes. Now, why do we have this type of a rejection on the part of parents?
How would you see this law solving a situation like that? You know,
I think that there
chicken
are
wing inspector.
Yeah, the chicken wing inspector. But when you see a kid comes to school and he probably isn't dressed as well as the rest of the children in the family, there are three or four in school, and it's obvious he isn't taking care of as well. I don't know if you remove him from the homes or what you do, but I think you should have the option to have someone who is looking after the welfare of children that might be able to talk to the parent at a meeting. Maybe get a feel of it. Now, see, I understand your problem. I wouldn't want to see somebody going into a home telling parents how to raise their family and all this. There are some real mental abuse, real ones, to the point where they don't even talk to that child. And so that kid is ostracized. There's just about everything you do. And it's usually in a larger family, three or four. If it's just the one child, that's all we're going to. But we see it a lot, and of course, in terms of alcoholism, where a child suffers from mental abuse, just because they aren't talked to, but that's because parents are still awesome. These are people who theoretically are perfectly normal people. They just plain are using their children, mentally abused. Now, how you get at that, I don't know, but it's a real issue.
I think Mr. Hacking has the same problem. I do, though.
I've heard the same problem, too.
How to take this thing, because very few of the state are better qualified than the parents, and the observation.